Welcome back to season 7. I can't even believe it every time I say it. This is season 7. You know how long that, you know what that means. We started in the pandemic and here we are. So welcome back to season 7 of the Sister Brunch Podcast. We're the podcast all about Black women and Black gender expansive people who are thriving in entertainment, media, film, TV, all of the above. And today's guest is no different. I'm so thrilled to have this guest on. When he's not experimenting with his own storytelling, he works on other productions, helping art departments build a myriad of different worlds. And, you know, maybe he gonna help us out here on Sister Brunch at some point. Welcome, Rain Hansen.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're so thrilled to have you, truly. So we met recently at Black Indie Ignite. Mm-hmm. We got a shout out to Shauna Spencer, mm-hmm. who has also been a guest on the podcast. Incredible. And founded Quelle TV. So we're also hoping that maybe you end up getting some distribution on Quelle. It's good to plant those seeds. But we met there, and then you came to our Sister Brunch season 7 kickoff event and celebration. And you know how the algorithm works is like, as soon as we met, I was on TikTok and who do I see but Rain? And I just became really impressed with you and excited to hear about your story and share your story. So I'm gonna ask you to share your story. Go back as far as you'd like to go back. You know, certainly life in Jamaica, being a storyteller, being trans in Jamaica, and as far as you want to take us back and kind of key elements in your story.
Okay, well, I would say, I grew up in Kingston, Jamaica, so that's where I'm coming from. I feel like I've always known I was creative, loved creative writing, English. And I just always think having, you know, worlds in my mind. But it wasn't until after I moved to the States and, you know, I was thinking about what would I want to study in school. And I was like, oh, maybe I could try writing for, you know, the screen. And, you know, went to film school on a whim and luckily loved it the more that I learned about it.
What were the seeds that were planted for you in Jamaica around filmmaking? And then how old were you when you came to the States and what school did you go to?
Okay. I was 16 and I moved to the States back in 2012. And then I went to Emerson College. That's where I went to film school.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And did you do, was in Boston then?
Yep.
And then you, did Came you do like afterwards. The time, because Emerson has a campus
Yes,
here.
I did the LA program. So,
nice. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I did my last semester out here. And yeah, I think, you know, I feel like growing up in Jamaica, I really honed in on my listening skills. I think that being an artist really requires deep listening. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been very connected to nature, the ocean, and just really like, you know, inspired by what was in my environment. And so I think I, you know, have carried that through to, you know, Boston, mm-hmm. back here to LA.
Just thinking about key elements, I mean, I guess I even want to know in Jamaica, like what were there, did you have favorite films? Did you, or was it that you didn't see the things you wanted to see and that's what kind of inspired you?
I think, you know, I was watching and consuming media at like, you know, the rate of someone growing up, like with a computer, computer access. But I think my, you know, what kind of inspired the kind of work I make now was being in film school and seeing, you know, films outside of the mainstream, you know, whether like purely experimental or just like, you know, the field footage from like Zora Neale Hurston's work, like not even knowing she was a filmmaker, like things like that.
Right?
Like I had to, you know, go to, I feel, you know, people always ask like, is film school worth it? Da, da, da. And I feel like the most invaluable thing for me and outside of the people I met was like getting exposed to films that are really just not are hard to find for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really spoke to the kind of work I want to make. You know, like I love, you know, a good rom-com like everyone else. But I
what's your favorite?
Ooh. 10 Things I Hate About You.
Okay.
I really like that one.
Yes.
I mean, there's others, but yes. And I, you know, I think I am drawn to cinema for the ability to show us something that's not just in our everyday world, and kind of like really leaning into, you know, the artifice of storytelling and just all the, you know, crafting the story through our lens. Mm. And that usually leans, you know, a bit more surreal and just, you know, utilizing like just really dreams. And like I said, that same deep listening of just like really kind of letting the story, you know, you're almost like a vessel for the story at that point. And it just kind of comes through you and, you know, just wanting to make work that, you know, spoke to me as a person who is queer, coming from the Caribbean, is now in the States, you know, has been exposed to like the, you know, mainstream Hollywood production life. But also, you know, the maybe perhaps lesser known kinds of films. And
all right, so no, you can't just say that. You go like what, like which ones? And you said the lesser known. Mm-hmm.
Well, so the first thing I'm going to say is definitely pretty known, especially in the States. But I'm thinking of someone like Marlon Riggs. Like when I saw his work for the first time, I was really, really like, I think forever changed. I impacted by just seeing someone blend like a different art forms together. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely very interested in like just almost like blurring the lines between genres. And I think that's why experimental feels like a safe, like, umbrella term for the work I make, but
so kind of because you do mixed media, right? And actually, let's even talk about what that means, what mm-hmm. that looks like in your work. But your point is kind of you like the kind of storytelling that mixes a lot of different things.
I'm right? very drawn to like layers and just like, you know, kind of putting everything together. I guess I'm not like a purist in that sense, so that can look like me using film and digital in the same project, which, you know, as soon as you do that, people are like, well, like, why are you mixing the two? Like, pick one. Or having like 2D animation or having VFX with the analog, you know, physical film, like merging the practical and the, you know, more modern.
Did you do that in Mooncake?
Yes.
Tell us about it. Well,
Mooncake was actually my first time working with VFX. And I feel like, again, it really opened up my mind to the possibility. You can do so. You can really pretty much anything with VFX if you have enough money and time, as I learned. But I think with Mooncake, it truly was an experience in the sense of like us trying to, you know, we didn't have a big budget. Like the budget was $10,000 for everything.
Wow.
And so it really required.
And $9,999 went to VFX.
Right, exactly. No, right. Thankfully, I had lots of, you know, people excited about the experimental grant that I got and, you know, wanted to just be involved. But I bring that up because it was like, you know, it was based on my friend's childhood memory from when they were growing up in China. And obviously we knew we weren't going to film in China. We knew that we didn't have the budget to like build out hyper realistic sets that felt like you were in China. And so again, just kind of being like, okay, what can we do? And so, you know, my art department background, I was like, let's get like, you know, hand-painted backdrops, miniatures, and then using the green screen to kind of like fill in the things that, you know, just to kind of help it gel all together. Because again, with a tight budget, it was hard to like, you know, make things hyper-real. And so we just didn't try it too at all and leaned into the recreation of my friend's memory and, you know, what it felt like. And yeah, just, you know, it's definitely a more like stream of consciousness type of piece. Very reflective and just about giving, you know, your inner child grace as you understand, you know, those early instances of desire can tell you so much about yourself. Mm.
So I'd love for us to talk a little bit more about art department because you're the first guest we've had in our seven seasons. I know, I'm just realizing we've had a prop person, but we have not had art department itself. So talk to us about how you got started in that. And also if any of our listeners or watchers are interested in doing that as a career, what would it take?
I've like discovered what art department is, or just, you know, production design in general at Emerson in film school. I didn't really know that was a thing that you know, specification. We know about the camera, yes. We know about the lights, we know about right. acting, but it's one of those underrated parts of the storytelling process. Yes. And I, you know, was drawn to film school for the writing aspect, but I very quickly realized that I love being on set. And I was like, okay, maybe I can DP. And I, you know, was taking some of those workshops, and all the technicalities of the lighting stuff was kind of going over my head. And I was like, okay, it's starting to feel like I'm in like math class again. And so I was like, yes. You know, then I started to just kind of do art department for friends. And because of, I think, my artistic background and liking to be hands-on and just crafty, I feel like that's my, mother. My mother's a very, you know, DIY, will make her clothes, make her decorations type of person. And yes. so I and definitely inherited some of that. And so I quickly realized it was a way to inform, you know, the world building and decide what was in the frame. Similar to DP, but, you know, more
more physically, right, yeah. Right.
And getting more into the, you know, the period setting and the characters' interiority and just really like, you know, the details. And yes. I feel like I'm very drawn to details. And so it's one of those things that the more you learn, the more you realize you have so much more to learn. Because, you know, on big Hollywood projects, the art departments and the set decoration, you know, it's like huge. So much goes into it.
But they got all that money too. So it's nice. Yeah, yeah. Right, right. Yes.
But I realized that was how I preferred to collaborate with people when I wasn't on my own projects, was like being their production designer or, nice. You know, working in that world. And anytime, you know, even now my freelance hustle is primarily doing art department. So if I'm, you know, doing below the line work, so to speak, it usually tends to be art department. I just enjoy like the hands-on nature and just really, I don't know, that really speaks to me, like the literal sense of world building. Because you get the script, but there's like all the details that goes into making that space come to life.
Love it.
And it really, you know, speaks to my like design eye and
So speaking of that too, so we've talked about that really it's mixed media and I guess when I hear that, I think about that, like that it's that tangible things you can touch, you know, and you talked about film and digital together, like and I want to know in what ways that may be connected to your personal story. I'll say, let me just put it this way. You're so brave about sharing your own journey, right? Like, you know, in reading your bio, you have support as a lesbian filmmaker, but you are trans male.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when I saw you on TikTok in particular, I was like, yes, for somebody to talk about their experience and now be making a short, I'm going to presume, transcend, right, is allowing other people to watch you allow yourself to grow out loud in front of people. And I guess I'm wondering if there are connections between the mixed media and that journey and how you identify. And if there aren't, don't feel pressured to.
Yeah, I've never thought about it that way. But I'm sure there is some connection in the sense of like just defying boxes.
Yes.
You know, like I feel like, you know, you're presented with several things and it's like not black and white. It's just kind of, you know, picking and taking and pouring into different things that speak to you and all of them and allowing things to coexist in a way. And so, yeah, I never thought about it before, but I'm sure it's kind of coming from that same place, that same part of me that doesn't just want to kind of like, you know, color within the lines, so to speak.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, now, and that, I want to ask you about, so I'm going to be vulnerable and admit that embarrassingly, I don't frequently get experimental.
Mm.
I can appreciate it. I can be, if you know, like if there's any aspect of it and like maybe the visual, I can be like, okay, the visuals were amazing. What do you recommend for somebody who is watching an experimental project? So that, and yes. I'll say someone who's very literal. My problem is like, I'm like, just tell me what I'm supposed to understand, right? What do you recommend?
It's hard. I feel like I talk about this every week. Experimental is a label that I have a love-hate relationship with.
Yes.
It's very like relative, so it doesn't really mean anything on its own. Like, you know, it's always referring to whatever the mainstream thing is. And so it's constantly changing. I was experimental in, you know, the
meaning
60s.
When it's referring to the mainstream, because it's like, if it's not mainstream, then it's experimental.
Well, yeah, because usually like whatever conventions exist, an experimental approach would be, you know,
breaking those.
Yes, breaking those conventions.
Got it. Okay.
I kind of just, like I said, for me, I'm just like, this is an umbrella term. And it I will show you what that means to me. And for me, it's kind of just like, it's almost like a disclaimer to the audience. Like, this is not going to follow the typical conventions of, you know, a movie. Like, yeah, a blockbuster movie. You're going to, you know, maybe it'll be one take the entire time, or like one angle the entire time. Or maybe there's no music, or maybe, you know, everyone has their own. Because like I said, it means so many different things to different people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's almost just like a way to set expectations for what kind of film you're going to get into. But, you know, I think not everyone has a tolerance, as I say, for experimental film, because sometimes, you know, it might be a red circle moving, you know, for 15 minutes straight. And you're like,
and I'm like,
and, you know, for me, I'm willing to go there with a filmmaker and hear about why they did that.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody has an interest in, like, you know. I really believe that Q&As are really important for experimental films, because, you know, we need the context.
Yeah.
And you need to hear
from
the filmmaker.
That's like in a museum, I'll just go straight to, like, I'll read the description and then I can stand back and look at it and be like, okay, I think I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
With Mooncake, I tried to go to every possible screening just because I was like, I know it will make all the more difference for me to contextualize the intentions behind this. But yeah, I think, for me, yeah, it's kind of just goes back to, like, you know, almost for, how do I say, like, to not really put a definition into it, but just, it's just, like I said, it's just more of a, like,
like how
you know that this film,
we're gender expansive, right?
Yeah.
Like, this, the part of the podcast, you know, that has been important to our team from the beginning. And it's more like, we just don't want to be in a box. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like you're saying, you know, as long as if it's not that thing that, like, conforms in all the ways that you know, that everything else is conforming, or that we're told we have to, then that is experimental.
Yeah. So to speak, yes. And like I said, it could be other things as well. I don't think it's the only, like, you could have, like, you know, an experimental drama, an experimental comedy, experimental, you know, it's like kind of like the modality more than the genre.
Okay.
But I think it's okay if you don't love all experimental. Like, there's times where even I am like, like, I feel like I'm being held hostage in the thing, because I'm like, what is going on? But, you know, I'm more inclined to seeing, like, how people are, like, shaking things up.
Mm.
Yeah, as much as I love, you know, the classics and all of that too, I think it's any kind of response to the mainstream, especially being a Black queer person, like, you know, that's, I feel like we're
that
always
in and of itself. It is, you
exactly.
An experiment.
Exactly.
Experiment, right? Yes. So Transcend, which also, again, so I, you know, we met at Black Indie Ignite. Then I saw you at Sister Brunch, and then I saw this incredible person raising a lot of money on TikTok, and then you made me think I could do it, and I'm not doing it the way you're doing it. So,
listen.
But talk about the film, where things are now.
Yes. So Transcend is my next short film. It's about a father and his, you know, child who is exploring their gender from really early on. They're navigating the loss of the child's mother. And so, you know, I really just wanted to create a story where the queerness is not the source of the tension. And so, like, especially in a Jamaican context, because I feel like, you know, I've been told my whole life, oh, that's just how they are. You know, that's it. That's, homophobia is a standard. It's never going to be questioned, renounced. Like, that's, you know, but I, you know, really, I'm just like, okay, but what if someone did decide to parent in a more nourishing way and, you know, give their child space? And so it's really, like, you know, exercising, like, painting that picture for myself as well. And, you know, giving myself that, you know, visualization of like what it could be like. So it's not biographical in that way. It doesn't necessarily reflect my own story or relationship with my father or parents. But I think, again, I'm very interested in like showing on screen what feels out of reach in real life. And so Transcend is another example of that.
And you're shooting it in Jamaica, right?
Yes. So she's in Kingston.
Yes.
It's been very important to me, this, you know, whole development, fundraising. Everyone is like, can we shoot? Can we shoot in Hawaii? Can we shoot in Florida? Can we shoot in? I'm like, no, no. It has to be Jamaica because it's so, I mean, it's really hard to explain, to put Jamaica into words. It's so many, such a specific and layered, you know, experience, especially in Kingston, where it's, you know, a lot of, as the largest population, so many different kinds of people living together. But, you know, it serves as the most authentic backdrop to dissect masculinity. I think all the time we would spend in trying to get somewhere else to look like Jamaica, we might as well just film it in Jamaica.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and I think the filmmaking scene in Kingston is really, you know, growing and thriving, and I really want to collaborate with other Jamaicans. So that's
beautiful. And we should mention, I mean, I know we try to keep these episodes evergreen, but just, I think you had just started your campaign and then the hurricane happened at home too.
It was, yeah, it was my last week of the campaign.
Oh, it was the last week.
And so, which was rough because that's the week where you really, typically we get most people because they're like, people have been meaning to donate.
Yes.
You know, that's when I would like, you know, really amp up all of the marketing and the posts. And I remember it was like literally to the T, like Melissa landed on Monday. And my campaign was supposed to end that Saturday. And so it was like, I was like, I cannot post about a movie right now. Like, it was just like, I cannot ask people for, you know, money for a film right
when
now.
It's got to go towards people.
Yeah, it was like, people are about to be really devastated. Yes. And so it, you know, it was actually, yeah, I was like, I have to just let the campaign go because there's no, which is so ironic to be, you know, spent like a month and a half talking about this place and like why the story is important and why Jamaican story is important. And then kind of be like, the people, the actual people I'm thinking about are, you know, in danger, so to speak. So
yeah,
that takes priority. But it's actually one of my producers, Natalie Jasmine Harris, you know,
yes, who really, Natalie Jasmine Harris, season 5 or season 5.
Oh, really?
Five.
Oh, yes. Wow, of course.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We love you, Natalie.
She's amazing, yes. But she kind of like talked me off the ledge a little bit and was like, no, like, I think, you know, let's find a way to reframe it. Like, I think what you're doing is still important.
Yes.
It's still, and so we made a commitment to give a part of our fundraising to local like queer organizations. And so yeah, that's the only way that I could move forth with that.
Yeah.
And I think it did ultimately help. I think people in that week
money.
Wanted to do something. They wanted to do something for Jamaica, but they didn't really know what.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the more that you give people a way to be like, hey, this is going to people actually on the ground, especially queer people in Jamaica, that, you know, a lot of people and celebrities are posting about Jamaica, but, you know, it's, and not that there's anything wrong with this, but it's Jamaica at large. But those, you know, within that, queer and trans people in Jamaica definitely get, you know, they're more of an afterthought, I feel like, when it comes to,
absolutely,
you know, the government and other institutions there.
Yes, and the representation. I mean, this is, I feel like this is the first of its kind.
I
would imagine, is it?
I can't think of another one that's trans, masculine specific. There's a HBO show actually came out last year, because You Get Millie Black, that had multiple queer characters. It was really incredible to see. And honestly, seeing that, you know, really affirmed in my mind. I was like, okay, I can make this movie now.
Yeah.
I mean, even if I couldn't have like 5-10 years ago.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and so, yeah, I definitely, it feels like people keep, you are like, I'm so, like, when they donate, they're like, I'm happy to be part of history. And I was like, whoa, that feels like almost too big. But I think, you know,
that's how I felt. I'm like, by the way, don't forget who people came through for you.
No.
Because really, that is what it is. You are making history.
Yeah, and I think that's why people are responding to, because they can't think of an example of this. Like, the closest thing I can tell people is, like, imagine if Dwayne Wade was Jamaican. Like, that's, like, the one cultural reference. I can be, like, a father who is raising a trans child that, you know, is actually allowing the space for that.
Yes.
But even that is so rare. And so, you know, putting that in a Jamaican context, really, people are like, okay, I've definitely never seen that.
If you are enjoying this episode of Sister Brunch, you have got to join the whole community. And we are over here. All these conversations we have on Sister Brunch, you will be able to do this with us weekly, even daily on Patreon. So you can find us at patreon.com/sisterbrunch. You can join us for free. I mean, if you've got funds, we appreciate that too. You can have a monthly membership or join us for free. You're going to get behind the scenes. You're going to get some sneak peeks at episodes. We've got merch. We've got conversations going on over there that you can't see us having publicly, really. This is our place to really talk about all the things that we talked about at those original Sister Brunches in person. We are doing over on our Patreon, so join us there.
Hello, my name is Rain Hansen, and you're listening to the Sister Brunch podcast.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So now, we're already talking about the fundraising, some for Transcend, and we're so excited. Whenever you stay in touch with us, we also want to do a little case study with you on Patreon. You should join our Patreon because we hope we'll get you to kind of talk about making this short. But we want to go to our financials segment. So whatever you're comfortable with, and actually I'd love both of these. One is, what is the kind of salary range or fee range for art department? And then also we'll talk about the budget for Transcend. So whichever one you want to start with.
I would say with our department, it really varies. Like, you know, I'm in IATSE, for example. If I'm on a union shoot, it's way different.
You're in IATSE.
Yeah, it's way different from...
Like, how many hours does that take? What?
It was a lot. Right. But I joined like a year before the strike. So I feel like I don't know if this is going to be recorded, but I haven't reached the full benefits of being, like, I feel like in the early peak of streaming, you know, everyone was working union was like, so many people got their days and got in, including myself.
Yeah.
And then I feel like it hasn't been the same since the strike. So I don't know if I worked any union jobs this year. Last year I worked a few and, you know, here and there, but it's not like I've been TV show the way most people who are in the union do. So, you know, I think just...
So because it's union, there's scale, right? Like if you are going to work art department, you can look up what the scale is. Because one thing we think about a lot is like encouraging our listeners, our audience to negotiate. And you can start with scale, and you need to start with scale. You need to know, like, go on IATSE, find out what do you make for art department. And that way you go in knowing. But how do you have enough power, or are you like, yes, I'll take the job, whatever you don't pay me.
Honestly, going back to what we're saying before, art department is really underrated and undervalued. Yeah. And so
you take what you can get. Okay.
I always know in every project I go on to that the DP is making twice as much as the production designer. Like, I just know, even though I truly believe we have the hardest job on set. Like, no one has to prep like the art department.
Yeah.
We'll be the last ones packing the truck because we have to wait for camera to get out, lighting to get out, and then we can start the wrap.
Yeah.
And then we're putting all the pieces back in the house and so it really is a very physically laborious job, time, you know, intensive job, prep, wrap, dressing, everything. And so, you know, I would say if you want to do art department, definitely, you know, art PAing is a good way to test it out and see, you know, what parts of it you like, what parts of that department you like. Because there's the more office side of things that are like, you know, floor plans and graphic design and, you know, more like computer software stuff. And then there's the shopping and the building and the
painting is like all of painting. That.
Yeah, there's so like much other physical stuff. You know, it just depends on which side of it you like.
And you, which side do you do the?
I like being on set, so yeah, I do a lot of set dressing and prop stuff. Yeah. Or on like, you know, short films, I'll do like production design as well, depending on the scale. I feel like I've worked pretty much every role, but it's hard. I mean, I think figuring out what your bare minimum is and like making sure, like I'll take a flat rate for a short film. I know how it goes as a, you know, director. I get it. And so, you know, I have my, like I wouldn't do a short film as a production designer for less than $1,000. I mean, that's okay. The lowest. Good. But that's my bottom line, because I know what it will require of me to do those passion projects. Right. Especially when, you know, it's like you're probably prepping alone, and then you're going to get what, like one PA to help you on set. And like, you know, there's so much involved. Like, it requires so much time and creative energy, you know, that you, I'm like, if I can't pay rent with this, then it's not even worth me like killing myself over, because it's like, it's truly like at least 2-3 weeks of work, like in total, no matter how many shoot days, just because of how much
you're doing the prep, right?
Yeah,
like you start from, off kind of
from the meetings and the boards, and then
location scouts and all
and of
that,
course
right?
You know, the locations sometimes they don't know until the week before, you don't know what your workflow is gonna look like. It, you know, it's just, it's not, yeah, it's not the most glamorous job on set for sure, but I think that's just where I figured I like to be in terms of the, you know, production machine.
So, all right. So this is a perfect segue into our Let's Talk Tech. So is there like a term that you use maybe on set in the art department that, you know, if you said it to somebody else, or like you can make me sound cool if I ever meet an art department person, I'm like, oh, by the way, you know, what can I say?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I feel like there's so many, even just like on set in general. Like I remember the first time using a walkie talkie. There's so many things that is like, okay, this
what's
is
the bat what's bathroom again?
Oh, 10-1.
Okay, 10-1. Yeah. That's a good one. Let's say that one. That's perfect. Actually, everybody really needs to know that one.
I was gonna say this is like one of the first like concepts, or maybe this is kind of two, but one of them that came to mind is like greeking.
Greek,
like,
wait,
it's
G-R-E-E.
Like Greek, except greeking.
Yeah, greeking.
So basically that's like, because of, you know, clearances and copyright, in especially in this country, like if you see any kind of like, let's say we're looking at a shelf or like a fridge and there's a bunch of products, greeking is just like cheating every individual thing. It's a very set dressing, you know, thing that you do.
Okay.
You cheat it so that all the labels are like facing away from the camera. Because if it's not in focus and clearly visible, then you don't have to worry about copyright. And so that's just like, you know, that's like step one, I feel like, when you're suggested, like knowing that, oh, you need to watch for any logo. And greeking can also be like putting black electrical tape over like the TV logo, like whatever. Yes. It just has to do with obscuring, like branding and logos.
The brand or the logo so that you don't have to pay.
Yep.
You don't have to pay the
which
brand.
Is like, that's greeking, why they're paying you, so that they don't have to pay. Yeah.
Exactly.
Or even like aging is another concept that I feel like really, so the art department, it's really like a big part of our job that obviously we buy things a lot. Sometimes you get it from prop houses, but sometimes you're buying, you know, a box from, you know, a box like a retail store that looks new, but in the story it's supposed to be a lived in house. And so different things you can do to age certain things depending on
what
it is.
The secrets. How do you make it
there's
look
aging
older?
Powder. There's aging sprays.
Really?
Sometimes it's just like, you know, literally dirtying something up with like whatever dirt, you know, it could be. But just making things look less shiny and store-bought, just like it feels more real.
Do you like throw it on the ground and stomp it?
That's one of them. With scenic painters, they have like techniques that they do to paint sets so they don't look like a freshly built house. Like, that's what, like when I say art department is one of those things that I'm like, every day I learn something else, it just affirms that there's so much more that I, like, it's one of, it's because there's so many crafts in one. It's like home renovation, design, architecture, like so many, like, you know, psychology, like it's like all these
absolutely.
Different anthropology. I mean, you have to become like an expert at so many different.
Love it.
If your character's a gardener, suddenly you have to know all the things.
Should
gardening.
We feel bad for the person that's doing art department on you on Transcend? Because are you going to be like, no?
You know what?
You're going to let them do, or are you art department on Transcend?
No, I'm not. I learned the hard way from doing my thesis film because, you know, I was like, oh, I love art department. I'm going to write, direct, production design, costume design, this, that. And I learned the hard way that when you wear multiple hats, you can't give 100% to everything.
That's right.
You know, that's the beauty of being a director, is that you can have a say in everything without being that role. Like, you don't have to be that role to have, you know, creative jurisdiction. So just let someone else do it.
Let someone else do it and let them know you know what they're doing. It just, so that you can.
Right, exactly. Let it inform your, like, communication with them. But you don't need to, like, micromanage in that way.
I love it.
You know, as long as you, you know, it's more about hiring the people that you trust to, like, that may ensure that you won't, you know, want to, like, so what laugh are we going to have today? And like, you know, you can just let them.
You get to focus
trust that
on
they're
going to
have the laughs. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
I love it, Rain. Okay. This has been, I knew I would be learning from you and I'm so glad you're here. Okay. So this is our signature Sister Brunch question. So Rain, you and your younger self are sitting down to a Sister Brunch. What are you both eating? What are you both drinking? And they can be whatever age you want, whether over 21 or not, if that's what you do. And then what do you tell him?
Okay, well, we're definitely going to be having Jamaican breakfast. I love Jamaican breakfast. I don't have it enough. But
yeah, what's your favorite? Do you do sorrel?
No, any fresh juice. I've got in Jamaica, it's always a fresh juice around or like tea. It's either tea or fresh juice.
Yes, yes.
Or both. Mm-hmm. And I honestly get very emotional thinking about my younger self. I, as I'm sure you can tell, you know, was extremely shy as a child. I'm less so now, but still, you know, I was very much in my shell and very like, you know, afraid to speak, just really like, you know, was inclined to just kind of, you know, like kind of just blend in. I didn't want to like be the center or like be in the spotlight at all. Like I would love to go to like, you know, my music, like piano class, but I would hate to have to do the recital. Like I was like, why do I have to do it in front of everyone? Like I just want to learn.
I don't want to be a performance.
I never wanted to perform. And I think like somehow I found myself in a field where I have to like, you know, be like leading a project or like doing Q&As or things that do require being in the spotlight.
Getting on the Sister Brunch podcast.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I think, yes, I don't know. It's hard to fully articulate, but I think I just know that as a kid, I was just so often scared. Like, that's just like a feeling I remember being in different spaces. I never, like, it's hard for me to really feel like just I could be myself. And somehow, you know, 30 years later, I feel like I still feel like, you know, I have to like, you know, give myself pep talk to like do something like this. And, you know, I'm still trying to find that confidence in my own voice. But I think honestly, being queer just kind of saved my life because it, it really just forced me to just really get to know myself.
Yes.
And sorry to talk about without being emotional, but it really like, I think obviously it was hard at some moments to confront these things, especially like, you know, being queer is one thing and then being trans is another thing. And I'm still, you know, working, just figuring out what that means to me. But I think like it has really felt like a spiritual experience to just really have to trust your own feelings and what you, I don't know, like trust your own desires and your, you know, things that speak to you. And I think, I don't know. I think I probably always knew, but I think if I was less worried about, you know, just being seen, then I probably would have like found solace in this a lot sooner. And so I think, I don't know what I would say except like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to be so scared. But yeah, sorry about it.
Don't be sorry, Rain. Rain, you're such an exceptional, truly exceptional person. And I've known it since the minute I met you. I was like, there is something here.
I appreciate that.
And this is what it is. I mean, you're a gift. You're such a beautiful gift to all of us. And to everybody who's going to be able to see your work and understand it, even if it's experimental.
Yes.
That in your, you know, in your vulnerability, in you know, in your choice to, despite feeling scared and uncomfortable, to go ahead and tell your story anyway is so powerful and so meaningful. And we are, my goodness, we're so honored to have your story on Sister Brunch.
I appreciate that. I'm very grateful.
Thank you. We'll be following. We'll be supporting. Yes, we'll be doing everything we can. You raised the money already. You don't need us for that, but maybe in post. All right. Congratulations, Ryan. Yes, thank you so much. Okay. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of the Sister Brunch Podcast. We've had we've just had another amazing, impactful story. And I tell you, every single time we do an episode, I think it can't be topped by the next guest. And here we are every single time being moved, having the opportunity to introduce all of you to somebody that you should know and to stories that you should hear. So we're so privileged and honored. And thank you for joining this episode of Sister Brunch. So Sister Brunch is brought to you by Trujillo Productions. Our show creators are Anya Adams, Christabel and Sia Boadi, and me, Fanchon Cox. Our amazing season 7 producers are Sam Henderson, Tasha Rogers. Our associate producers are Ashanti Groves and Charlie Savage. Sister Brunch is recorded on the land of the Tongva, the Chumash, the Gabrieleno, the Keech, and the Serranos people. And we are so honored to be able to live and work on these ancestral lands. We'll talk to you next week.